Hello again, and welcome to the Mana Pool. This is, you know what, I'm not going to lie. I'm not even going to try. I have no idea what episode number this is.
Well, don't you want to know?
I mean, yeah, if anyone knows. Let's see.
How about 666.
Not quite, no. Let's see. So if I go
415, is that right?
Yeah, themanapool.com, the Shadows Over Innistrad pre-release field recordings is episode 414. So yeah, this is 415. Yay! 415. We are brought to you, as always, by CardShark.com. A better way to buy and sell magic cards. Where, you know, you can buy and sell magic cards better. It's a hell of a tagline, isn't it? This is
You can even do Magic Online cards.
That is very true.
They had a reminder about that in their recent newsletter.
Newsletter? Why don't I get the new... Oh, because I signed up with my Hotmail account. Oh, God, I haven't used that in ever.
Oops.
Whoops. I have to go change that. Anyway. So, yes. Mana Pool. Right. It feels like we haven't done this in a long time. So, sorry. We had the clip show, and then we did the live episode at the pre-release, so we didn't record last week. And it's been very weird. So, right. I am Chewy, the lead dork, and failing miserably at keeping us on task. And with me, as always, are some dorks. Dorks, sound off.
I'm Brian. I'm the lead rambler. And, you know, I'm here. And we got a really interesting topic for you today, and I'm really excited about it. And that's all I'll say for now.
I'm Mike. I'm the rules guy and the game lore guy. And I agree. Even just a week's difference of taking off makes me feel like I have no idea what I'm doing. So hopefully I'll be able to pull it together.
And I'm Dirk, the self-proclaimed greenest man alive, and moral compass of the group. And Mike stole my line!
And family!
I did not steal his family.
No, he didn't do that. Ooh, he stole my line of, I have absolutely no idea what I'm doing, I'll just kind of wing. But of course, Mike stole my lines, and now I'm still clueless and going to wing it, but now I'm a twinsie with Mike.
Well, isn't that precious?
We're twinsies!
So, real quick, because this just happened today, and I don't know if Brian sees this sort of thing. Hey, Brian, we got a comment on an old episode, episode 409, from Ben. Not the Ben we know. This is a more different Ben.
Episode 409 is an old episode?
Well, compared to, like, last week's, yeah.
Okay. Alright, go ahead. Said, no, I didn't see this comment.
It said, if you enjoy the show, I'd highly recommend reading the trilogy The Magicians is based on.
Oh, interesting.
And he said, Quentin is purposefully made to be a less than stellar character, so he has plenty of room to grow as a person.
Well, good.
That means nothing to me.
Well, I mentioned in my final thoughts when I was talking about the episode that the main character, Quentin, is not... He's kind of a douche. He's not very likable, I think, is what I said. So, that's good that was a purposeful decision on the writer's part, I think is better than nothing. I did not realize it was based on a trilogy of books.
He also said the books get quite a bit darker than the show, and the first two are kind of depressing, but the series as a whole was excellent. So thank you, Ben.
Good. Yeah. Great.
We also got some pre-release stories from JT and Drew and Turner. And no, that wasn't the pre-release story. So yeah, hell yeah. Now, yeah, that's it. So let's get right to it. There was a ban-restricted Liz update. They killed the Eldrazi Menace. Yeah.
Yep. They banned Eye of Ugin. In Modern, they banned Eye of Ugin, which... You know, I think Mike had said, you know, he used to play Tron, and it's a little sad to see it go, but I think this is one of these greater good kind of things.
Yeah, I understand. It does seriously change the late game options. If I were to go back to playing Tron, I think I would try maybe a one of Sanctum of Ugin in that spot just to see what happens, or I just might forget about that altogether and just add something else there.
Word. They also unbanned Ancestral Vision and Sword of the Meek. And good lord, mm-hmm. Ancestral Vision and Sword of the Meek were all over the place in the top... I forget how many we looked at on Monday Night Magic, but the top however many of the Star City Classic in Modern. So it's good to see that those bannings and unbannings actually made a big difference.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're good cards. If I remember correctly, both of them were day zero bans because they were parts of really oppressive standard and extended decks.
Right.
And there were some of those that they just went ahead and banned right on the spot because they didn't want to bother with anything stupid they might do later.
Pretty much. So, I think that's all of the news that matters. As far as what few things that our listeners would care about. And our listeners probably don't even care about that. Also, humans are a huge thing in Standard all of a sudden.
Oh, yeah. Did you – I was watching the coverage of the Open. Did you actually get to see Todd Anderson's deck in action?
No, I don't watch coverage unless it's Pro Tour.
Oh, it was really interesting. It's a blue-red control deck. And I was watching a game where literally Cedric and the other commentator were like, oh, Todd's really far behind now. He had out like a thing in the ice with one counter left on it, another thing in the ice in his hand, and just a couple cantrips. And the other guy had a fairly overwhelming board presence. And I think he was playing green Eldrazi ramp, like the big holdover from last season. And
how was that behind? When you're explaining this to me, it doesn't sound like he's behind at all.
Yeah, it was like a thing in the ice with one counter on it. Sounds like you win.
Haven't many lands. He only had four or five lands. So
you only need one spell to remove the last counter and transform it and win.
Well, first he played the other thing in the ice because the front half is a horror as well, which yeah. I don't think anybody caught. And then like, oh, shoot. And now he's swinging for 7, and then next turn he's going to bounce everything again and swing for 14. And that maybe he didn't look – if you knew everything that was going on, it may not look that far behind. But the other guy had him like if he didn't – if Todd didn't win, he was about to lose. So Todd just said – went from like not doing anything all game except for digging through his deck to, oh, and I win. And in the second game, the guy kept – playing his Worldbreaker, and it didn't matter because it only chumps an Awakened Horror and it can't blow it up. So he's like, play a Worldbreaker, destroy that land. All right, swing in with my 7/8, chump block, bring it back, blow up your land. He's like, all right, swing with my 7/8s. So it was really – it reminds me a lot of decks that I've played, like the blue-red of it definitely appeals to me. It's a bit of a like, not doing anything here, just drawing every card in my deck. But any deck that has Pyromancer's Goggles, 3 Pyromancer's Goggles is awesome. And if you watch the deck tech, he talks about how they – at one point he's like, I want to try Goggles in this deck because he's, you know, testing with the Star City Games team, quote unquote. And he's like – and they're like, you sure you want to do that? He's like, yeah. And then he's like – after a little testing, he's like, no, we need 2. And then after a little testing, he's like, no, we need 3 in here because it's just that good. And
the goggles do everything.
And it's so – but they're a do-nothing card, but they're awesome because they do everything. And he's got stuff in there, not just the card draw, but like Fall of the Titans gets crazy when you're doubling it because it already hits a couple things. So, yeah. I like his deck a lot. So his deck – and Eldrazi and humans right now are the ones to definitely watch out for. So I'm hoping to go to a standard event in a couple weeks. And I dropped a bug in Mike's ear about that. I don't know how much of that he remembers because he was talking to Chewy at the time. I was like, hey, Mike.
Yeah, by the way, it's really awesome. Listeners, you don't know how great it is to hear one side of a conversation when Brian is the side you can't hear. It's just long pause and uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Oh, were you actually there? I thought you were on the phone with him.
Yeah, I was on his other phone, not the other
one. Oh, you were on... Oh, okay.
So I could just hear him going, uh-huh, uh-huh. And it was really funny because I do that when I'm talking to you too.
I believe it. I believe most people probably do. But I felt bad because I was like, hey, I want to tell Mike about all this stuff. He's like, all right, I've got Chew on the other line. I'm like, okay, I don't want to be rude. This goes against my very basic nature of just like pouring out information because I didn't want to keep him waiting. I didn't want to keep Chewy waiting. So if it seemed like the conversation was a bit stunted, it was because I wanted to tell you all this stuff, but I wasn't sure how to condense it. So I apologize.
Anyway, to the topic at hand.
Yes.
For God's sake, shut up, Brian.
Good luck with that.
So, as everyone knows, Oath of the Gatewatch brought us four very nifty cards. And those cards are the Oaths. Oaths. That word is hard to say. Oaths. Oaths. It's a funny word. It's a really funny word. Oath of. Ad. Hey, what set was that I just say?
The Gatewatch.
Oath. Oh, look, it's Oath of the Gatewatch. Hey! How about them apples? Okay, so. Each of the four planeswalkers that came together to form the Avengers, the Gatewatch, took an oath, and each oath got a legendary enchantment. And each one has a thing when it enters the battlefield, and does something extra, that deals with planeswalkers.
Yeah.
So, like,
usually Chandra, based on, yeah.
Like, Chandra is a bolt when it enters the battlefield, and then at the beginning of the end step, if a planeswalker entered the battlefield under your control this turn, she deals two damage to each opponent. It deals two damage to each opponent. So, Oath of Gideon gives you allies when it enters the battlefield, and gives new planeswalkers extra loyalty. Jace draws three cards and discards two, and then scries for the number of planeswalkers, and then Nissa tutors the top three cards. It's a really good card. And you can spend mana of any color. You can spend mana as though it were mana of any color to cast planeswalkers. So those are nice and simple and awesome. And we've talked about them, you know, back in the day when Oath of the Gatewatch was new. Hey, Brian, I don't know what you just did, but it was really loud. And so was that.
Sorry, I had to adjust it. Okay. It was pinching my ear. I'm back.
Well, hey, do me a favor. Mute before you adjust stuff. Because it actually is really loud. Okay.
Sorry, I'll remember that for next time.
Probably.
And we already know that the designers plan on using more oaths in the future to show, you know, to show the point where another planeswalker will join the Gatewatch. Because it's not just about protecting Zendikar, it's about protecting the entire multiverse.
Right. So they're the Avengers. Like, for real, for real.
Yes.
Except they're the Planeswalker Avengers. And that's way better than the Great Lakes Avengers.
Is that an actual subdivision of Avengers? Because I don't read the comics.
It was a long time ago. And they were sort of a joke. Because there was the Avengers West Coast, and then there were the Great Lakes Avengers, which Hawkeye started with the best of intentions. But Hawkeye was kind of a dick in the comics. So they were like, hey, you want to come back to the Avengers West? And he was like, yep, later, losers. And off he went. And they were like, we're no losers. They were losers. Anyway, feel free to look that up if you really want to. One of them is called Dinah, D-I-N-A-H. Soar, S-O-A-R.
Really?
Yes. And she's a...
dinosaur?
She's a dinosaur-shaped person. With wings. Yeah, see? That groan? That was the entire team. The other, just while we're at it, some of the other members were Mr. Immortal, who was sort of a dork that couldn't die, Doorman, who I think could like teleport, that sort of thing. I was thinking
he was going to be like a patsy or something, you know, like a person who opens doors and sit, or a chauffeur. There you go. They'd be like a chauffeur.
Is capable of teleporting someone anywhere, but with the limitation that it has to be in the next room, and with his own buddy serving as a portal of sorts.
What? But he can't go with them then? Yet his body stays where it is?
This is weird. Capable of teleporting someone anywhere, but with the limitation that it has to be in the next room. That doesn't even make sense.
Yeah. That is by definition not anywhere.
So it's like a super, super crappy version of Cloak?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
There's Big Bertha, who is a female version of Blob, essentially. And get this, Flatman, who is sort of like Reed Richards, but nowhere near as cool or versatile or interesting. So yeah,
so when you get his attention, he essentially is cloaked because it's like the two planers. But, you know, like you look at somebody who's not three-dimensional, but two-dimensional. Mm-hmm. And so you would just see a line.
I don't think he's actually flat. I think they were just really running out of names for stretchy flat superheroes. Flat.
There you go.
Because that's the DC has like 10. Like, they're like, the elongated, no. Ooh, plastic, no. Mr. Fent, damn it. Anyway. So what we decided to do for this episode was think about the oaths that we would get when other planeswalkers joined the Gatewatch, the Gatewatch. So, some of us did actual cards. Brian did actual cards. Mike came up with just some basic, guidelines for each one. I came up with the actual oath they took, the flavor text, which is at the bottom of each of the four oaths that exist now. And Dirk is just here to help.
Yeah.
Dirk's gonna spur on conversation. Because Dirk has three kids, doesn't have time for this nonsense.
Yeah.
Three kids and like two dozen chickens.
18.
Okay, 18 dozen, chickens. Dozen and a half chickens.
Almost anyway, two dozen.
So let's get to it. Let's see. Mike, you did like guidelines for each one, so pick one and let's go.
Yeah, I was telling them earlier, you know, now that I know I have to go first, I had choice paralysis and I didn't know where to start. So I'll just start at the top of my list. I ended up doing mine in alphabetical order. So Ajani comes first. Ajani's thing, except for the Ajani Vengeance card, back when he was an angry young cat man, he's more of a leader and a mentor. A lot of his abilities either buff or protect something or give some other kind of bonuses or gain life. And I'm thinking that for his oath, the enter the battlefield ability, or it might just be a static ability, will be an anthem effect for your guys, you know, plus one, plus one, something like that. And then he might have a triggered ability that goes off every turn that gains you life somehow based on the number of planeswalkers you control or something that happens when you play a planeswalker. That's what I'm thinking for a Johnny.
Cool. Okay, he also had the plus one, or he was also throwing around counters, so his comes into play could also include, could potentially have put plus one counters on X number of things as well.
That's true. He did have some of that. But Mike touched on that a little bit with the anthem effects.
Well, no, I'm saying that instead of a static ability, it could be like the other oaths we've seen so far where it's triggered and throws out counters, like Dirk is saying. Then it would be more in line with the feel of the ones we have so far.
See, this is already a really interesting discussion to me because it hits so close to what I came up with. So that was fleshed out, and then you can compare. Okay. I had the Oath of Ajani.
I've already heard the extent of what I came up with.
Okay, Brian, I'm going to need you to say that again because on my end you blinked out.
Okay. Somehow. Sorry about that. I was just saying that I thought this discussion was already off to a good start because just through Mike and Dirk fleshing it out, it's amazing. What I was saying was it's amazing how close they came to what I Dirk touched some things and Mike touched on some things. So I was going to go ahead and spell it out if that was okay.
Yeah, go ahead, because you blinked out again during that, but we got the gist, so go ahead.
Okay, all right. So, Oath of Ajani for one white. When this enters the battlefield, gain five life. So that's the static come in, gain five life. At the beginning of combat on your turn, put a plus one counter on up to X creatures, where X is the number of planeswalkers you control. So you're not piling them all up on one thing because Ajani, as you said, is more of a leader. He's more, you know, there to inspire. But the more planeswalkers you have, then the more things that can get plus one counters on them. And then just the whole standard, you know, when he comes in, gain five life. I toyed around with three life or four life, and I was like, you know, if it's just going to come in one time and it's a legendary enchantment, it should feel like it's worth it, you know? So.
Yeah.
So, but I found it funny because, you know, Dirk mentioned gaining, I think you mentioned gaining some life and you mentioned the anthem effects and using that triggered, and that's pretty much exactly what I came up with. So, I thought that was pretty cool.
Nice.
Did you happen to come up with any flavor text for Ajani?
Yeah, so Ajani's thing, once he stopped being an angry young Catman, is he's all about justice. Like, that's his thing.
Mm-hmm.
And because... So I went to the... what's it called? Hang on, let me scroll back. The game info / story on magic.wizards.com. You are among legends, and it's essentially a Meet the Planeswalkers type of thing. I spent a lot of time on this on these pages. So, Ajani, most of what it says about him is very story related. You know, it's like, here's what happened to Ajani, and there's not a whole lot about his mindset, but there's also
his personality.
Yeah, there's also a lot of flavor text and whatnot, and the related cards. Any card that depicts him, or that depicts the Planeswalker, or has flavor text by the Planeswalker, or even about the Planeswalker in some cases, is listed here. So I read through a bunch of those, and I came up with, yeah, Ajani is just all about doing the right thing because it's right. So what I came up with is, because it is right and just, I will keep watch. He's boring. He's your stereotypical, like, good guy.
Yeah.
And not like, oh, he's a good guy. No, like hero, like good guy. So, yeah, he's like Captain America, you know.
Yeah, he might see a little more development now that Elspeth is gone and he's kind of basically taken to trying to not overthrow, but trying to denounce the gods of Theros. He's going around telling everybody, hey, if you stop believing in them, they won't have power over you. And so he's kind of taken on a different quality, but that's been a very late development. So,
and also, a bunch of these Planeswalker stories are not current.
Yeah.
Like, the last sentence is, Elspeth kills the god of rebels, but with dire consequences. Theros is restored to its natural state, but Ajani is furious at the gods who wronged his friend. And that's all it says. That one's actually up to date, but there's nothing past that. It's just, hey,
yeah, we have
he's mad. But why is he mad? Because Elspeth was unjustly killed. See?
I went onto Soren's page just because I wanted to confirm something, and his is all about what he's doing on Tarkir.
Yeah, it hasn't even gotten Innistrad yet.
Yeah. And it's not the comprehensive, you know, oh, this is what he's done before and all that I was kind of expecting. It was more just like, just looks like a little blurb that was written for Tarkir.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Like,
so
Elspeth's, just while we're here, the last sentence is, her feat of heroism has captured the attention of Heliod, god of the sun, who seeks to make her his champion. That's all it says. There's no, oh, she dead, oh, she's going to be returned later. Nope, none of that. Returned with a capital R. She's going to be a returned later. None of that. It's just, hey, this is going to happen later. What? Update your crap, wizards. Damn. Anyway, so that's a brief explanation as to what I've been doing.
Okay. All right, so who's our next Planeswalker?
Yeah, Mike, who's our next Planeswalker? You're so smart.
See, some of the ones that have only had one card associated with them and only maybe like one or two or zero stories written about them that have shown up on the website were harder for me to brainstorm for and think up. So
right. The
one I have for Arlen isn't very interesting. You know, she probably makes wolf tokens, whatever.
Yeah.
We don't know enough about her yet, but let's see. What's a good one? Oh,
I actually couldn't come up with any flavor text for Arlen either because I don't know anything about her.
Yeah, we don't know her yet. Let's skip over a couple. So Nicol Bolas. So Nicol Bolas wouldn't actually join the Gatewatch. I know we've joked before that Obnixilus's oath would be something like, to ensure all of you die horrible screaming deaths, I will keep watch. You know, something like that.
Yeah.
So now all the Planeswalkers are going to be on board. But I'm thinking, you know, Nicol Bolas, he's evil. He only loves power. He loves manipulating people. He loves conquest. His oath would probably be pretty expensive because he's Nicol Bolas. He costs 8. So I'm thinking it could, when it enters the battlefield, it could draw you a big chunk of cards, maybe 4, maybe as many as 4. And then whenever you cast a Planeswalker spell, you get to take control of an opponent's creature.
Ooh. That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah. That's what I came up with for him.
Okay. Do you want to hear my my Oath of Nicol Bolas card here?
Oh, cool.
Sure.
Okay. Oath of Nicol Bolas for 2, a blue, a black, and a red. So for 5, which is definitely toward the top of these that I did. When this enters the battlefield, it is a siphon mine for 3. So each opponent discards 3 cards. You draw a card for each card discarded this way.
Oh, God.
Which is going to be just ridiculous in multiplayer. But I had it at 2 originally because I'm like, ooh, multiplayer, this is great. But then I thought in a duel, I'm like, you're paying 5 to make them discard 2 and draw 2. And it's legendary. That just feel – and it's like tricolor. So I bumped it up to 3. But then I also thought, like, Mike – this guy is not necessarily about, hey, let's all hold hands. I thought he's going to use the other planeswalkers with like the puppet strings, and he's going to basically like throw them at his enemy. So his second ability for me is each planeswalker you control has, and quote, when this card is put into a graveyard from the battlefield, it deals 5 damage to target creature or player, end quote. So he's turning them into bombs to basically – you put this on the field, and then if any of your planeswalkers actually die, then they go kaboom because he doesn't mind using his allies, who are really nothing more than pawns, to completely just as ammunition.
Wow. So I think from what we've seen of Nicol Bolas cards – that, like, mechanically, Mike's makes more sense, but flavorfully, yours is way more better.
I like awesome. Brian's a lot.
Dark, what do you think? Is there anything you'd like to see on an Oath of Nicol Bolas card?
Nicol Bolas is one that I don't know enough. I don't know terribly enough about him to say one way or the other, so.
Okay.
Other than, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the oath that came up with him is, for reasons of my own, I will keep watch.
I like that, because he plays it close to the vest. Nobody actually knows what he's thinking about.
Yeah, so. Like, if he were to ever show up and do that sort of thing, he would have his own angle. But he's not going to let anyone else know. But he's so powerful that I'm sure they'd rather have him, you know, where they can see him than not.
Yeah. He's gonna be the guy that shows up and says, I can help everybody. And everybody is like, we don't trust you, but we need you. But it's gonna bite us in the ass. And then ultimately what's it do? It bites them in the ass. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
Okay then. What else you got, Mike?
Alright. Let's move on to Garrick. Garrick was the original green planeswalker.
Yep.
And he's had plenty of printings over the years. He eventually got Veil Cursed, which was bad, and he started going around hunting and killing other planeswalkers. But he still has that big tough guy, you know, green hunter character to him, even though now he just kind of, instead of hunting because it's part of the natural order of things, he does it because he likes killing people. So I'm thinking that when his oath enters the battlefield, it could make a beast token. A lot of his cards make beast tokens. I'm thinking that it's fine for there are many planeswalkers that like creatures and make tokens, and I think it's fine for multiple oaths to also make tokens that go along with them.
Sure.
And then to reflect the like big bad green and black hunter planeswalker that Garrick has become, I was thinking that maybe his other one would be like a loyalty fight ability. Like when a planeswalker enters the battlefield under your control, they can deal damage equal to their loyalty to a creature.
Oh, that's cool.
Oh, wow.
I like that. I like that a lot. Held
back, I don't know. But
I like that a lot.
Yeah. But yeah, some kind of loyalty fight. I thought was a cool way to show the hunt.
And he can deal the damage to creature or planeswalker.
Or planeswalker.
Or maybe... Mm-hmm. Because his recent bent is actually all planeswalkers are my enemy. Maybe it would be better if it was like two, flavorfully anyway, two target planeswalker or player.
That's the same thing with the way that the damage redirection rule works.
Oh, that's true.
It's not necessary to write that out on the card.
Yeah.
I mean, that's true.
So it might not be clear that that's what you're going for if it did that, since you would just say target player.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
So I actually could not come up with flavor text for Garrick, because in Garrick's current state, he wouldn't join the Gatewatch. He would kill them all.
I don't know that he can form the verbal word, the command to say anything. It'd be like, Arisha,
Arisha, rah, 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 he was that crazy for a while, but he was able to regain his presence of mind in the last bit of story we had about him.
Well, I mean, according
a little bit.
Okay, wait a minute. According to this write-up, which may or may not be current, and I don't read the Magic stories, so I don't know, he's still out hunting planeswalkers, and all planeswalkers are his prey. Is that still the case?
Yes.
Okay, so...
He's still super dangerous, but he's not, like, flipped out animal intelligence crazy.
Okay, good. So, yeah, he wouldn't join the Gatewatch at all. He would just show up and kill people. So I made a note for the green one, you know, for a pre-curse Garrick.
Go ahead. That's good.
What I came up with was, if it means hunting the most dangerous prey, I will keep watch. Because who else, what could possibly be more dangerous than a thing that requires all these planeswalkers to work together?
It's true.
And I think
you're going around from...
Yeah, I think Garrick would get a kick out of hunting the Eldrazi Titans. I'm just saying.
or going from world to world looking for literally the most dangerous things. So
yeah.
Yeah. I started to say I cheated because I was having a hard time to nurse Garrick. So I'm glad – look at that. I'm glad I wasn't the only one. So for Oath of Garrick, I had him costed at 2 and a green. When it enters the battlefield, you may reveal up to 2 creature cards from your hand. If you do, draw a card for each creature you revealed this way. Ooh. Because a little bit of a harmonize, but, you know, rewarding you for going with creatures. My first thought was, you know, make a beast token. And there's nothing wrong with that at all. But I was looking through here, and I'm like, all right, this makes a token, this makes a token. And I'm trying to make different kinds of tokens. So I decided to go with this one. The second ability I'm not as in love with, and I feel like I kind of shoehorned it in, but kind of going off of his, you know, untapping lands from his first iteration, but focusing on creatures. First, I was doing like a Seaborn Muse kind of thing, and I thought that's not really him. But what I had was at the beginning of each opponent's upkeep, up to untap up to X creatures you control, where X is the number of planeswalkers you control. So the more planeswalkers you have, the more creatures you can untap. But I mean, I kind of like some of Mike's ideas better, like with the fighting with the planeswalkers, and you can still do that with the pre-cursed iteration because he's more likely to team up with them and say, "Hey, welcome to the team. Go fight that thing. Mm-hmm. Prove your loyalty or something." But that was what I had.
I like that first one because several of Garrick's cards have dealt with drawing cards based on things.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I thought that, again, because he's, you know, he more than a lot of planeswalkers is heavily tied to creatures and specifically green creatures. So I'm glad you like that.
Dark, I had originally thought that he would be a good one for an either. And the thought was he either gives a creature trample or gives a creature +3/+3 until end of turn.
Ah, okay.
Oh. Mm.
And then I had also thought about it, it's what Mike had said about, you know, the fight each other sort of thing, that one of his comes into play would be destroy target creature to feed into the black part. He comes into play, he destroys target creature.
Okay, so when the oath enters the battlefield, you can destroy a creature, and that's part of the green black aspect.
Right.
I can see that.
Yeah.
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 Maybe if you want to be really flavorful with it, it kills a weak creature, like a smother effect, mm-hmm. because it's, you know, it's weeding it out, or destroy the creature with the lowest power or toughness or something like that. So.
Yeah, the one about gives either a trample or +3/+3, that's still he's still running with the creatures and everything that he had before is just, mm-hmm. or maybe that would feed into the solo green or the mono green one that he either, if there's a planeswalker present around, then he gives X number of creatures trample or +3/+3, based on the number of planeswalkers that you have, something like that.
Something like that. Okay. Mm-hmm. Alrighty.
I get the feeling that Garrick sounds a lot, just when he speaks, he sounds a lot like the hunter from Hearthstone. I can't think of his name.
Rexxar.
There we go. I just hear Rexxar because they're so similar in spirit.
So they've got the helmet thing that covers up their head except for their mouth.
Who should play Garrick in a Magic the Gathering movie?
No, we don't have time for that.
Oh, okay. That is a separate episode.
Rock Johnson.
That we did already. But yeah, definitely The Rock. That was easy.
Okay.
So, all right,
who's our next planeswalker?
Let's see. Let's talk about Karn.
Oh, yeah.
So, Karn, believe it or not, even though his planeswalker card kills everything, Karn really cares about peace and order.
Well, he used to.
I think he still does.
He seems really pissed off. But his rage is focused on what he's done. So it's more like a repenting.
Anyway, keep going, Mike.
Sure. No, what Brian's referring to, for a long time, Karn was a strict pacifist. This was during the Weatherlight saga. That was because earlier in his life, there was an incident where he was acting in self-defense. He was defending himself and I think also Gerard, and he accidentally ended up killing someone. And he was so racked with guilt that he decided to never raise a hand against anyone ever again, ever. Eventually he got over that after he was able to liberate himself from the Phyrexians. And
he got over this handicap of pacifism.
Yeah, first thing he did after Venser gave him his heart was he goes, you know what, I'm going to blow the hell out of this place. And he lit up every Phyrexian in his line of sight.
Right.
Like, yeah.
To be fair, though, Phyrexians aren't people.
Hey, that's racist.
You're damn right it is.
I decided to play up the peace and order part of Karn instead of the, you know, point and click, blow that up. And I'm thinking that when his oath enters the battlefield, you can make one or maybe even all of your opponents skip their next combat phase. And then his static ability could prevent damage to your planeswalkers. Like whenever a source would deal them damage, prevent one of it.
That is actually nice.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
He that would definitely be the centerpiece of a very planeswalker centric deck, you know?
Yeah.
So
And I think it's okay to have that damage prevention be the static ability since it's balanced by the fact that these enchantments are legendary, so you're not gonna stack those up on top of each other.
Stacking
damage prevention effects like that on top of each other is horrible and miserable.
Highly abusive. Yeah. How much would yours cost? I'm curious. For that set of abilities.
At least 4 or 5.
Okay. I'm curious.
I'm thinking
I went with
3 and a white or something.
Well, no, it'd be colorless.
Okay. In that case, probably 4 or 5. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that's why I said that, because it's colorless.
Because I went with the kind of excuse of, all right, here's a big bad guy. Not a big bad guy, but here's a guy that you don't want to mess with. And taking a little bit from his previous iterations, but I kind of wanted an excuse to make a really big, fearsome effect here. So my Oath of Karn costs 6. And when it enters the battlefield, you search your library for a colorless card, reveal it, then put it into your hand and shuffle your library. So that's pretty good because you can get almost anything. And push comes to shove.
For I have again.
I don't think that's the part that they were concerned about, honestly. So, but if you have to, this can always get a land, but you know, it costs 6. But here's the thing, and I had to work so hard on this wording. So I want to say it and then you can tell me if it makes sense to you. During your turn, Whenever an effect would remove loyalty counters from a planeswalker you control that has at least that many loyalty counters on it, it adds that many loyalty counters instead.
I don't think that does anything.
Yes, yeah, so, I mean, it stops instant speed damage, like spells. Like, bolt your bulker at the end of your turn.
That's not an effect that does that. That's a game rule.
I was looking for an effect that would change the minus abilities into plus abilities, but that you still
That's a cost, yeah.
Right, but that you still had to have that many on. So you can't just lay down one and say, all right, I'm adding infinite counters here to do X damage to whatever. I wanted to be able to say, all right, you can – like let's say a planeswalker has a plus 2, a minus 2, and a minus 6. Right. And you could – as long and let's say it had four counters on it. You could do the plus 2 and add 2 counters. You could do the minus 2 and add 2 counters. But if it didn't have 6 counters on it, you couldn't activate that last ability yet. To keep it from being
– same.
So the wording is completely off, but what do we think of the actual ability? I think it's broken?
Yeah, a little bit.
It wouldn't work the way – well, what I'm thinking of wouldn't work the way you want it to if otherwise activating the ability would set it to zero, but it still might work. You could make it a triggered ability that triggers when you pay the cost of a loyalty ability.
Okay. So when you pay the cost of the loyalty ability, then if counters would be removed from it, then – there'd be a way to phrase this correctly.
Yeah, the wording doesn't matter for the purposes of this conversation.
You add back twice the number of counters that you removed.
Yeah, there you go, sure.
Like I said, that won't work for your – if it has two and you use the minus two, that won't work with the way I said it. You have to –
because then it would be gone.
There'd be a lot of words.
Okay, again, the wording doesn't matter for purposes of this conversation. What matters is what he's trying to do. What do we think?
It's interesting. It is broken.
I think it's completely busted, but the fact that you have to have this legendary enchantment and a planeswalker out that then becomes busted because of it kind of made me go, well, okay, because really all you're doing is you're ensuring that the planeswalker sticks around longer, like potentially much longer, but if the effect is not allowing you to do anything
in
the
fast – that is not all you're doing.
Okay, it's also kind of ramping you.
Yeah, you're also building to the ridiculously overpowered limit break, like next turn.
It's true. And I wanted to do something big and splashy.
And Venser would just be sitting there like, make an emblem. Make an emblem.
Remind me what Venser's emblem is again.
Whenever you cast a spell, you can exile a permanent.
Oh, good lord. Yeah, Mike. You're not a nice person, so – but I guess I'm the one that came up with this. But no, I wanted to come up with something huge and flashy, and it's Karn. And, you know, Karn monkeys with the rules of the universe sometimes. He makes his own – he made his own world, so it's like, wee! But I realize flavorfully it's perhaps not a home run, and I'm okay with that. Dirk, what do you have to say about Karn?
The only thing I would potentially think about with his is maybe when he comes into play, he exiles target creature, because that was one of the things that he had.
Yeah, his Death Star. Yeah. I was actually surprised either of you did a Death Star thing.
I thought about it, and once again, kind of like the tokens, I felt like I was having similar effects for a lot of oaths.
I wanted to come up with something especially special for him.
Yeah, and that's why I did the search, and Mike did the pacifism effect. Did you have flavor text for Karn?
Karn's whole deal now that he's free of the Phyrexian contagion is he's tracking down the Phyrexian contagion. Like, that's his that's his whole thing right now is, look, this completely screwed my house. It essentially burned his house down. And because, you know, he created Argentum, and then he left, and then Argentum was corrupted. Well, other things happened and it turned into Mirrodin, and then horrible things happened and the Phyrexian thing happened, like in Scars of Mirrodin. And it screwed up Karn, it screwed up his world, he's not happy. And his whole deal is trying to figure out where this comes from. So the only possible reason I could find for Karn to stop that and join the Gatewatch was not stopping that. So it's
to find the source of this evil contagion, I will keep watch.
Yeah.
That's all I could come up with, because Karn is he's very single-minded at the moment.
Yeah. Alrighty.
Mike, what you got?
Alright, let's talk about Liliana. Even though in Magic, the color black isn't usually a team player, I think just because of Liliana's, relationships with the other characters, and, you know, she does care. She's crazy and slightly evil, but she does care that she might join, the Gatewatch at some point.
And kind of like Nicol Bolas, especially if she feels like it's in her own best interest, but she also has the ability to form personal connections with people that he lacks. So.
Yeah, so Liliana, she's a very powerful necromancer, and she's actually a fairly powerful mind mage in her own right, you know, in the way that black in Magic is able to do those things. So I'm thinking that the enters the battlefield effect for her oath would just be a simple raise dead. Maybe even, you know, you could add some mana to the cost and maybe you get two creatures back to your hand from the graveyard. And then the other ability that would have something to do with planeswalkers, I'm thinking that, let's see, what do you think about a blackmail-like discard effect where the number of cards they revealed is based on the number of planeswalkers you control?
That could be cool. I think I like that.
So, like, reveal X cards where X is the number of planeswalkers you control, and you choose one and they discard it?
Yes.
I like that.
I had not thought of that. Yeah, that's nice.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And very similarly, my oath costs one and a black. When this enters the battlefield, raise dead. Because at a lower cost, I wanted to keep it just one, but Mike and I were 100% eye to eye on that. For my second ability, I didn't really go with the mind approach. I more went with the necromancer approach because she has shown a particular aptitude, especially as of late when you see her in the story. Like when Jace goes to see her in Innistrad, she is surrounded by undead servants. I more went with that. So mine is a very straightforward. At the beginning of your end step, well, I don't know, hold on, am I reading the wrong one? No. Yeah, at the beginning of your end step, put X 2/2 zombie tokens onto the battlefield, tapped, where X is the number of planeswalkers you control, where that's fairly strong, but they're coming in tapped. You're getting them at your end step, so you don't get to use them right away. And, again, you're getting none until you get any planeswalkers, and then you're getting one, two, and then you're only getting ridiculous amounts if you're going straight planeswalkers. But I kind of like Mike's approach a little more just because it's a little more interesting, I think. And this is one of the cards where, again, I'm making tokens here, so I maybe took them away from other oaths. But I felt like mine was pretty true to part of her flavor, and I think Mike's is pretty true to another part of her flavor. And I like how we both completely intersected, had like the same wording on the enters the battlefield. So,
Yeah, right. So, I looked up Liliana's profile, and according to this, she's dealt with two of her four demons. I thought she had dealt with three of the three, or two, or three of the four, but apparently not.
She's dealt with two, Gristlebrand and the last one. Yeah.
Okay.
Since getting the chainmail.
For some reason, I thought there was a third one that she had already dealt with, but apparently... Brian?
No, I think that was Dirk.
Drop the iPad. I'm here.
No, that
did you hear anything weird?
Yeah, we heard all kinds of weird.
Sorry, that's my fault. I couldn't mute in time that time.
You frequently.
I'm sorry. You couldn't
hit the mute button while it was in midfall.
Yeah, what's wrong with you, man?
If I could do that, I would have caught it. So, Mr. Smarty Pants.
Okay, so.
So anyway. So she's dealt with two demons.
Yes, she's dealt with two of the four demons that she has business with. Or business with. And also, I think Mike is wrong. I don't think Liliana cares.
You don't think she cares?
I don't think she cares. I think she, tolerates, and I think she deals with, but I don't think she cares at all. At least according to this, I mean, even the last thing here is Liliana's ambition has led her to interact with beings from all over the multiverse. But ultimately, Liliana's greatest love and first priority is herself. She's convinced that everyone else is in it for themselves, too. She's just better at playing the game than they are. I was like, damn! So...
Yeah, you're probably right.
So, the only way I could see her joining the Gatewatch is as a favor. And now you owe me one. And of course, the only thing she's got going on is tracking down demons. So, I've got... In exchange for your existence... No, wrong line. Hang on. There we go. Had the wrong thing highlighted. In exchange for your assistance with some demons, I will keep watch. For now.
There you go.
Had to add in the extra word on Liliana. Because for now, it just seems so perfect.
Uh-huh. That's pretty cool. I like that. Dirk, anything about good old olive oil? I mean, Liliana?
No. No, I think Mike had just an absolutely awesome idea for that.
Yeah, that was pretty much a home run. So,
Hey, Dirk.
Okay.
What? Who's the planeswalker you like? I'm sick of Mike's jumping around.
Going with it. One I thought about was Elspeth.
Okay.
Nice.
So for hers, because she's dead, I thought that instead of her putting soldiers into play, she actually puts zombies into play.
Interesting.
Why not?
So she's recruiting because she's really good at inspiring other people to fight for her, but one goes to war with the soldiers one has, right? And right now she's surrounded by mindless husks.
Yeah. And then to play into one of her abilities was that she I had put down target creature is indestructible until end of turn, but I don't know how you would work that in with the planeswalkers.
Yeah, was the only thing. Multiple creatures indestructible till end of turn, every turn.
That might get a bit abusive. What if you had at the beginning of combat a creature you control gets plus X plus O and gains indestructibility until end of turn, and X is based on planeswalkers. Actually, so
what I was thinking is that a creature, target creature, gains indestructibility till end of turn when a planeswalker enters the battlefield.
It's not
being abused, but it does give you an incentive to play more planeswalkers.
But because you can only play like maybe one planeswalker a turn, and probably not every turn, it's not being abusive. Okay.
Even so, I think maybe that's. That might even be a little limited. I think I'd be comfortable letting the ability hit multiple creatures or all of your creatures when a planeswalker comes in under your control.
Like
you just finished saying, that's not going to happen every turn. That's not
going
to happen.
But that's going to feel really crushing when. Hey. Yeah. Whew. I like the idea. I don't think I'd want to play against it, especially in limited, because I'd be like, Of course, then again, in limited, how many planeswalkers are you getting, dude?
Well, I'm just saying, if you fill your board, if you've just finished filling your board with creatures, are you really going to start jamming planeswalker after planeswalker for the next several turns? I don't think that's going to happen.
If I got this oath out, I would do my darndest, that's for sure.
You would. I'm just saying, in a normal game of Magic, that's not going to happen.
Okay. Do you have a card, Mike, for Elspeth?
I also thought about the Oath's Enters the Battlefield ability making tokens. I really like Dirk's idea of a zombie army Elspeth instead of a soldier army Elspeth. So I'm going to retroactively change mine to say the same thing.
Okay.
So what you're saying is Dirk's got a zombie army. You can't harm me.
Nope.
Voodoo, you voodoo, bitch. Okay, sorry.
And then I was thinking, because she likes giving plus something to creatures, that the other effect will be like an until end of turn boost. That's either based on the number of planeswalkers you control, or that's triggered by planeswalker entering the battlefield or otherwise doing something.
Yeah, like a plus X or based on planeswalkers, or a plus 3, since that seems to be something she likes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But when Brian was explaining his idea for his Karn ability, I really like the idea of oaths with triggers that trigger when you activate a loyalty ability.
I definitely want to do Koth next. I want to do, because I've got an interesting idea for that. But for my...
Did Chewie have anything for Elspeth? You haven't talked about Elspeth yet. Sorry.
No, for my Elspeth card, I had it at 2 and a white. I kind of flipped yours a little bit. My enters the battlefield ability is creatures you control get +1/+1 and gain vigilance until end of turn. So the pump is on the front end. Mm-hmm. And then my static ability is at the beginning of your end step, if a planeswalker entered the battlefield under your control this turn, put 2/1/1 soldier tokens onto the battlefield. And the thought there was, you know, not with the zombies. I really appreciate Dirk's idea for that. But with the soldiers that she had been accustomed to summoning, it allows you, two 1/1s may not feel like a whole lot, but it then allows you to play some of the planeswalkers that are not as good at protecting themselves or right. using abilities that you may not be inclined to use right away because you don't want them to die right away or something like that. So it gives you a little more insurance. And doing it like Chandra's, where you need to actually do it each turn, then it prevents it from being abusive, where like if you did like every turn get X soldiers, I feel like that would start to spin out of control
yeah.
pretty easily. Or you'd have to cost it out way too much. So
yeah.
But that was my idea.
And for her oath, I couldn't come up with anything for dead Elspeth. I got nothing. So I ended up going, if this was a pre-crisis Elspeth, because all she really wants is to just chill.
Yeah.
But she can't because she's all chivalrous and stuff. And so when she sees something that's a problem, she has to pull out her sword and go fight it. But she really just wants to be done with all that.
She's always looking for a plane where she can literally sit back, where she's looking for a pure plane where nothing bad ever happens.
Yeah. Where she can pretend to be just a regular person.
Yeah.
Yeah,
she does not like letting people know that she's special because yeah. she doesn't feel that way.
So I see Elspeth joining the Gatewatch for the greater good to help ensure peace so that she can finally rest and not like be dead's rest, but you know, rest. Yeah. And so I have for the peace I so desperately desire, I will keep watch.
That's good.
I like it.
Yeah. So Koth next, you say.
Yeah. I know mine is more specific, but because I led into that off of Mike's comment, I'm going to go ahead and say mine, and then you guys can give me your ideas and we can play off of each other. But since I had that kind of lead in, mine, the Oath of Koth costs 2 and a red. When it enters the battlefield, it deals damage equal to the number of mountains you control to target creature or planeswalker. I had this costed a little lower, and I said, well, that seems pretty good. It's probably going to be like destroy target creature, so let's make it cost 3 at least. And then the second one, and this is going off of what Mike was talking about, I said, whenever you activate an ability of a planeswalker you control, this deals 1 damage to target player. Because I thought that's very Koth, and you know, he – punches things. He's very direct. And I'm not going to do it so that it's also board control because screw that. You're going for the face. I didn't want to make it abusive, but I felt like this gives your deck a great sense of inevitability that you're activating these other things. Maybe you're drawing cards or bouncing things or hitting them or whatever, and you're getting this little bit of damage. And again, that may sound really, really good, and hopefully it would be, but because this is legendary and because you're only going to ever have so many planeswalkers at once, I don't think it's going to be – you might get like a lightning bolt out of this every turn, and that would be great, but chances are you're getting 1 to 2 damage. So that was kind of my idea, and that was going off of – like I actually literally designed this one right after Karn. So I also had that, you know, ways to use planeswalkers activated abilities other than just enhancing them or something like that. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's good.
Good.
I think it plays up his aggressive character really well.
Yeah, and besides, if you want board control, that's what Chandra's for.
There you go.
Yeah.
Differences between mono red planeswalkers.
Exactly, yeah.
So what do you guys think about Koth?
I also, you know, the aggressive part of him is pretty important. And his specialty as a geomancer is also important because not only does it tie him into doing stuff with mountains, you know, like raising elementals and whatever, but that means he can also make mana, since, you know, red can do rituals now. So right. I was thinking that his oath might be a cheap one that gives you a little ritual effect when it enters the battlefield. You know, it costs some amount of mana and it makes that much plus one red mana in return. And then for the other ability, I know I want to have him animate land, but I'm not sure exactly how I want to do it. I don't know whether I want it to be triggered on you getting a planeswalker or if it has something to do with the number of planeswalkers you control. I'm not sure. But I know I want the other ability to animate land somehow.
You know what? Screw an oath. I wish they'd just give us another Koth.
We need another Koth.
Koth is so
in the
awesome.
Storyline, we don't know what's happened to him currently in the storyline, right? He basically was taking on the Eldrazi, so Elspeth had a chance to – not the Eldrazi. The Phyrexians. Sorry, I got my interdimensional demon menaces confused. But he was kind of like blocking them so Elspeth could get away, and she wasn't sure if he was alive or not, and then that's it, right?
Well, according to this Planeswalker page here, he is – scroll. He's the leader of a resistance movement against the Phyrexians is all it says.
Oh, cool.
Which he sort of was when we found him. Like, he left to go find help, and he went back to continue helping the resistance or something.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, there is a pretty large contingent of Mirans who are still alive, who are living in the Furnace Lair.
Right.
Because, I can't remember his name.
The Praetor is letting them stay, right?
Yeah, yeah, because he doesn't actually care. As long as they don't bother him, he doesn't care. Because he's the red one.
Yeah, and that's how he rolls.
Why can I not remember his name?
As long as y'all enter the battlefield tapped, I don't give a damn.
Urabrask.
There we go. Sorry, with a U, not a V. My bad. Yeah. So since Koth is eat up with it. Since
he's, planes, as long as you control a planeswalker, so if you have a planeswalker, that couldn't you tap a mountain and deal one damage to target creature or player?
He had that emblem, mm-hmm. Right?
That was the emblem he could make, yeah.
Yeah, I think if you're going to make it, like, just tap a mountain to deal a damage once, that's not good. And if you're going to make it, if you have planeswalkers, you can tap mounts to do that. That's too good.
Yeah. Well, the only limitation, though, is that if you have the mountains, it means you're not going to be able to play things. But I can see where if you were to play, if you had that anthem out and then you had a planeswalker out, that literally you could just mow down someone's life.
Yeah.
And, like, in the game, if you had, like, let's say you had 12 mountains out that you could actually, like, deal 12 damage to the player.
Yeah, Mike's big red deck won many a game by finally getting the emblem and just going brr at the end of every turn.
Yeah.
But what Dirk said just gave me a really cool idea for another planeswalker. We'll see if we get to it later.
No, oh, okay.
Well, what about that the it could be like a Furnace of Wrath? No, not Furnace of Wrath. It's one where you every mountain gives you an extra mana.
Oh, like mana flare?
Yeah. Since he's a geomancer, his emblem could be like is via planeswalker, or sort of like Gliss's, where you could only you can only use that mana for planeswalkers, or if you have a planeswalker on the battlefield, that you can do that, or when a planeswalker comes onto the battlefield, then your mountains produce mana flare.
Wow. So your mountains make extra mana, but the extra mana can only be spent on planeswalker spells. Is that one of
the things? Well, no. Like, you could do a common, like, one of those three.
Yeah.
methods.
Yeah, yeah. I had a really interesting take on Dirks in my head where it's like when a planeswalker enters the battlefield under your control, mountains you tap, phrasing aside, basically produce an extra red. And what that actually allows you to do is do a pseudo high tide kind of thing where you like lay two planeswalkers and then go to Crazy Town. Once you take me to.
Planeswalkers tend to cost significantly more than high tide, but I get what you're
saying. They do. Yeah. But I'm saying this is interesting design space he's going on here.
So after you play your two planeswalkers and you have one mountain left, it taps for three!
OMG! And then you play whatever one produces, you know, for three, produces five mana.
Seething Song. Yeah, there you go.
Seething Song, there you go.
No. All right, you got six mountains. You tap to play a Tibble. You tap to play another Tibble because who needs the first one anyway? And you have two mountains left that each cost three, and you have six mana again, but you also have a Tibble.
Actually, you have three mountains up because Tibble you cast, you only had to tap one mountain to do it.
Oh, that's true. Okay. Oh, so now you've got nine mana.
Yeah.
Spine of Issar. And still have two mana.
And still have two left over.
Magic.
Oh my god.
Well, hey, Mike, you said, well, first let's hear Chewie's flavor text for Koth, and then you said that Dirk gave you an interesting idea, so let's go to the one you thought of next.
Okay.
So, like, the only reason that I see Koth leaving and joining the Gatewatch is, again, for the greater good. Because they're like, somebody goes to him and they're like, look, man, you see what happened here? Do you want that to happen somewhere else? Damn it, man! And they're shaking him and the rocks are falling everywhere. And so they talk him into it and he goes, to prevent other planes from falling to such a great evil, I will keep watch. How come all of these planeswalkers have really deep voices?
Cause in your head they do?
Well, I mean, a Johnny? Yeah. Garrick, definitely. Karn, yup. Koth, yup. Nicol Bolas, yup. Like, there's... Nicol Bolas is gonna be like, for reasons of my own! No.
Well, I mean, you know, Nicol Bolas is a dragon, and then besides Koth, all the other ones you named are, like, well above 8 feet tall, so they're big dudes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that makes sense.
All right, Mike, so what's the next...
Who did you think?
Yeah.
Okay, the one that Dirt gave me an idea for was Ralzeric.
Okay, now there's a guy who does definitely not have a deep voice.
No.
He has a very panicked, you know, like squeaky, shifty kind of voice.
I don't know about all that. Okay, what you got?
Ralzeric is he's a member of the Izzet League from Ravnica. He works for Niv-Mizzet. He's all about experimentation and lightning and all kinds of other crazy Izzet stuff. So when his oath enters the battlefield, I say it's pretty easy to loot. That's a nice blue and red ability. Loot some cards straight up. Not like Jace where you actually keep more, but like straight up, like 3 and 3 or something like that. Draw 3, discard 3. And then the idea that Dirk gave me was that the other ability on the oath is planeswalkers you control gain, tap, deal 1 damage to target creature or player.
Whoa! That's cool.
Because they don't tap, so now you're using space that you didn't already have before. Mm-hmm. Kind of like making enchantments tap.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so like yeah. Except for Gideon, yeah, nobody ever taps.
Yeah.
And Gideon only taps because he's punching people.
Gideon taps for a lot more than 1 damage.
Yeah. He's like, I could shoot you with this itty bitty lightning bolt, or I could, you know, punch you through the wall.
To death with my bare hand.
Yeah. You want to say itty bitty lightning bolt? Yeah. So, that's cool.
That is cool.
I don't know if any of you had come up with something for Ralzeric. I kind of doubt it.
Well, mine was for a blue and a red. Actually, really interestingly, when it enters the battlefield, you draw 2 and then you discard 2. And yeah. I just had a straight up looting there. And then I had gone around and around with the phrasing for the static ability. And I think I actually deleted it. So The last iteration I had was kind of like the blue-red, you know, you deal X damage and draw X card spell, but I feel like that's not very interesting. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it might be good, but it's not like, you know. So I'm just – don't even worry about mine. I'm just going to go with Mike's because, first of all, we had pretty much the same idea for the first ability, and I like your second ability so much more. I'm just – I'm adopting it, so yay.
That's mine.
That's Mike's, but I love it.
I like Relzeric. It's a shame that his card is only sort of all right.
It's pretty decent.
It's not bad. It's not bad. Yeah. It's no Tibble.
Thank goodness. So yeah, Relzeric's deal is he loves him some Ravnica, he loves him some Izzet, and he worked super hard to figure out all of the hints about the implicit maze for Niv-Mizzet. And then when time came to run the maze, Niv-Mizzet appointed frickin' what's-his-name, Melek?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Relzeric was like, what the hell, bro? So he is out to prove his worth to Niv-Mizzet and everyone in general. So I don't have a voice for Relzeric in my head. So I'll just... To prove my worth to all who doubted me, I will keep watch.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Dirk, anything about Relzeric?
Nope.
Okay.
There's like blue and red. Right. That's not blue and green.
I mean, you can't really do much better than that.
Can we talk about Vincer real quick? Because, you know, he's dead, but unlike Elspeth, he's not coming back.
Oh, poor Vincer.
The one I had, well... Do you want me to go first, like I did with Koth, or does somebody else want to go first?
Yeah, go ahead.
It's mine. Okay. All right. Oath of Vincer. For one, a white and a blue. When this enters the battlefield, blink a creature. Exile target creature, then return to the battlefield under its owner's control, because that was something he did, and he was about teleporting. Right. And that was one of his static abilities. At the beginning of your upkeep, you may sacrifice a planeswalker. If you do... Permanents you control get hexproof until end of turn.
Oh, that's nice.
I thought about making it hexproof and unblockable, and I'm like, yeah, I mean, sacrificing a planeswalker might be hefty, but that just feels rude.
It's a little and too then, game over-ish.
And then if you don't finish them off that turn, all you have to do is literally play another planeswalker next turn, use its ability, and then... kill it on the next upkeep. So I felt like this was a little more, but I thought it was symbolic of what he did and the flavor was okay. And it still feels pretty strong. And because it gives him hexproof and because you can only do it during your turn, it's basically a way to say, you can't mess with my stuff for this turn.
Yeah.
And I want it to be creatures and planeswalkers. So I just said permanence. So what do you think?
I think that is classy. I don't know how useful it is, but it's definitely classy. Because for those that don't know, Vincer literally gave his heart to Karn to cure him of the Phyrexian contagion.
And then he died, because, like, you know...
Because he didn't have a heart.
Didn't have a heart.
And unlike Nicol Bolas, who doesn't have a heart, figuratively, he doesn't have a heart in his chest, so, you know, it's sort of hard to keep breathing.
He turned into neither a heartless nor a nobody, although he is definitely nobody now.
He'll always be somebody. And actually, I'm not really into Vincer. And Vincer is one of those I couldn't come up with an oath for because he's just kind of there. Like, he was never super excited to be helping out in Phyrexia.
Yeah, he was basically dragged there. He wanted to be in his laboratory figuring stuff out, and Karn literally... Koth showed up, made some rock, like encased his head in rock, and then dragged him to Mirrodin and took the mask off and said, good, you're here, let's help. And he's like,
and he's like, son of a bitch, I'm Luke Perry, you can't do that to me. But he's not Luke Perry, he's Vincer.
I was on a personal, I was really sad when they killed him off because he was literally one of the very first new planeswalkers that they ever came up with, and he kind of symbolized everything about the mending, and they're like, yeah, he's dead. And I'm like, okay. So what did anybody else I know Chewie didn't come up with any flavor text, but anybody else come up with anything for the oath?
I did notes for all the planeswalkers, but there were a few of them where I kind of had to give up on what the second ability would be, and Venser was one of them. I just don't know. But I agreed with Brian that I did want the enters the battlefield ability to be some kind of flicker effect. Nice. But also because of Venser's aptitude for teleportation and a small bit of time manipulation, like Teferi, I was also going to give the oath flash.
Oh. No, ooh, that could be cool. So you've got an instant speed flicker effect that may also have some sort of secondary ability.
Yes.
Nice.
I like that. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
Maybe one of the others will have trample. Yeah. No, I'm kidding. I'm being silly, but I do like Flash here a lot. That makes it.
Oh, he's gone.
No, I'm here.
Okay.
I'm laughing about an oath of Garrett, where the first line on the enchantment says trample.
Yeah, they should make it and let the players figure out how to make it good, like that 1/1 elf with trample, only this is a little harder.
This is an enchantment with trample. This enchantment is such a badass.
And then you don't put anything else in the set that animates enchantments at all. All right, let's keep moving.
All right, what else we got?
Did anybody else do an Oath of Obnixilus? Because that was one of the inspirations for doing this whole experiment was he was the fifth planeswalker on – well, other than Kiora. And Kiora just kind of blew everybody off. But, you know, he was the other monocolored planeswalker on the plane. But he is not an honorary member at all because he tried to kill them all. So
isn't he the one that woke Kozilek up?
Yes.
What a dick.
They never really explained either how he figured out that Kozilek was still there.
I mean, he might have just been watching and saw Kozilek curl up in a crater and you know how like puppies will you know make a nest of a blanket or something.
Yeah, they'll like curl it around and then they kick at it in their sleep.
Yeah, maybe Kozilek or Obnixilus was up on a mountain somewhere, you know, well out of reach, watching, and Kozilek was like, and he sort of made him a little crater blanket, and then sort of curled it over him, and now he's underground.
As much as he might hate it, just because of how long he was trapped there, Obnixilus might have built some sort of magical connection with the plane of Zendikar. Even though he hates it and wants to destroy it completely, he just couldn't help it because of how long he was trapped there underground by one of Nahiri's Hedrons.
Yeah. So, like, he had a symbiotic relationship whether he wanted it or not, or a deep connection. Mm-hmm. So, okay. So for my oath of Obnixilus, kind of like what Dirk had said about another one, for 2 and a black, when this enters the battlefield, destroy up to one other target planeswalker because that's what he does. And it took all 4 of the others to actually like slow him down so that he had to retreat. So enters the battlefield, destroy up to one other target planeswalker. It's a black spell, so it feels very much like Hero's Downfall sort of thing. And then at the beginning of your upkeep, you may give up to X target creatures -2/-2 until end of turn, where X is the number of planeswalkers you control. And I thought that was pretty good at controlling the board, but not oppressive because you're going to kill a lot of small things, but it is possible for them to overcome it. Because you're never able to stack more than one instance of -2/-2 on something. So the key is just to play bigger things. And again, it's, you know, 1 per planeswalker. So, but I thought that fit with him pretty well, but tell me what you guys think.
I agreed with you that the enters the battlefield effect for his oath would be some kind of removal. I was going to go ahead and let it be a hero's downfall. You know, it's sorcery speed, so that's fine to kill a creature or a planeswalker.
Okay.
And then I was thinking the other one would be at the beginning of each opponent's upkeep, you get to drain life for the number of planeswalkers you control.
Hmm. is draining life really his thing? I mean, he hurts them, but does he ever actually gain life for himself in any of his iterations? Like
his most recent one had the get a loyalty and you lose some life and draw a card.
Yeah, his Planeswalker one is each opponent loses one life, you gain life equal to the life lost this way.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so he does.
Okay. Okay.
I forgot about his commander Planeswalker card completely. I forgot it existed.
Whoops.
That was a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. And he was a wee lad.
His most recent Planeswalker card and then his creature cards.
Oh, that's true.
Which also take life. His creature cards take life from people.
His creature card takes life and gets bigger. His Planeswalker card takes life from you and he gets bigger. Huh.
Yeah, that's what I was referring to. And I had a Sorin Oath that has more drain life effects because he's a vampire and that's what he does. I'm not arguing with you. I was just trying to clarify.
Ooh,
you
know, does Mike he actually wrong.
Does he? But if that's what he does, that's fine. I'm not saying he can't do that.
Mike sucks.
Well, part of it also that I thought it made sense was the oaths. At least the four oaths that have been printed so far. They also have a little bit of okay, this is you now on them with the way the second ability works. That's this is something Nissa does, but now you're doing it. You know,
you the player, yeah.
Uh-huh. Or this is something Jace does, but now you're doing it. You know, stuff like that.
Because we're like, so you the player are like Nick Fury.
Yes.
And to these guys, Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Okay, I get it. That's cool. So, like, whatever their abilities are, we basically have, because we're the ones directing them.
Right.
Yeah, okay, I got it. I like it. I didn't come up with flavor text for Obnixilus because Mike's joke flavor text is actually brilliant. One more time, Mike.
To ensure all of you die horrible screaming deaths, I will keep watch.
That's him. Dirk, do you have anything? On Obby? No?
Nope. Not for Obby. Okay.
All right. Is there another Planeswalker you want to talk about?
Yeah, Dirk.
Let's see.
Oh.
Fraley's. No. Not for Arlene.
Arlen Cord?
Arlen. The werewolf.
Okay.
One that I had thought was whenever you play it that you get a wolf counter.
A wolf token?
Mm-hmm. And actually the one that I had thought about as the commander is that either when a planeswalker enters the battlefield, something of this sort, it was the one that Mike had mentioned before with regards to Garrick, that target creatures fight each other.
Okay. Well, her emblem is all about punching people in the face.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, that was the thing is that I know it's about punching people in the face, but instead of that, because they're it was the card we made fun about the guy and the werewolf fighting it out and that they clash with each other, that having something of that sort where they clash and then not involving players.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my creature and it's contested cliffs that that and that they fight. Sort of thing.
Okay.
Cool.
I actually did not do a card for Arlen Cord because I did not do one for everyone and but I definitely agree from a flavor perspective. She is very much in tune with the wolves, and if you know her story, you know she grew up on Innistrad and then she turned into a werewolf, and when she planeswalked, she actually was stuck in werewolf form for a while, and then. When she returned to Innistrad, she found she could shapeshift as well. I wonder if there's a way to work in transforming on there, like able to transform some of your creatures at will. But because that is so set specific, I don't want it to be like Arcane all over again, yeah. Where the cards in one block care about it and then nothing else does. So.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Yeah. Arlen is another one of the ones where
I wasn't able to come up with a second ability. It sounds like we're mostly on board with her making, with the oath making wolf tokens.
Yeah.
When it enters the battlefield, either one or more.
What
but I
if,
do like Dirk's fighting idea.
What if at the beginning of each upkeep, up to one creature gets X plus one counters on it, where X is the number of planeswalkers you control, if no spells were cast last turn?
Huh.
Okay, I get it.
I realize you're not flipping it back and forth, so then you don't take the counters off later if you cast two spells, but that's just too clunky.
Ooh, should the oath be double-faced?
Whoa!
Wow. Okay, so you've got the enters the battlefield effect on the first, because you only have so much space, right? When this enters the battlefield, get a 2-2 wolf. At the beginning of the upkeep, if no spells were cast last turn, transform this oath. And then on the back face, you've got the werewolf switch back. Oh, can the first one be when this enters the battlefield or is turned to this or is transformed into this, you get a wolf?
It sounds like we're starting to make a little enchantment, Hunt Master of the Fells, but still, yes.
Okay, but so let's say that you get a wolf when this enters the battlefield or when this side is then flipped back up. Uh-huh. What happens on the other side? When you transform this, put X counters on a creature you control?
Yeah. Gosh, this is weird. Yeah.
Hey, it was your idea.
It was. Nah. It was a weird idea.
But I like that because then it incentivizes you, much like Huntmaster of the Fells, to keep flipping it over. And even if there's nothing on the board, you just get some wolves. And then later, if nobody plays a spell, you can then make that wolf or wolves bigger.
Hmm.
I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's bizarre and it makes my head hurt, but sure, why not?
Yeah.
I also still don't like the werewolf transformation mechanic, so why not make something else that makes my head hurt? While we've been discussing this, I did come up with an oath for her. Are you ready?
Okay. Go ahead.
Oh!
I knew it.
I actually didn't see it coming, and so boo this man.
I had to get up and walk over there. Did that come across okay?
Yes, it came across just fine.
Could you tell that I was over there?
Yeah.
Okay, good. So, gentlemen.
Yeah.
It's getting late. And we have way more of these. I didn't think we would get through all of them, but I didn't think we would get through this few. So, let's pick one more and go hard on it, and then we'll leave the rest for another episode.
Okay.
Okay.
How's that sound? Is that all right?
Sure. That sounds good.
What are the chances that we can all keep hold of our notes?
I will keep hold of my notes. Mine are on my iPad, so.
Mine is a Google Doc, so.
Alright. And mine is a notepad file on the beast, so we should be good. So who should we do last?
Do you want, who's gonna pick? Cause I've got an idea, but, you know.
Okay,
well, you already have some written, so.
Yeah, go well. For it.
Alright. We're gonna end on a high note. We're gonna talk about Tybalt.
Yeah!
Yeah, because there's some opportunity here. The poor guy gets no love because he's terrible. So my Oath of Tybalt costs a single red because, when it enters the battlefield, it deals 2 damage to target creature or player and 2 damage to you because it's a shock. And this may not be great at sorcery speed and it's legendary, but it fits into his flavor. You might modify that maybe 2 to something and then 1 to you, but I was going for like a Spark Mage Apprentice kind of thing.
Yeah.
At the beginning of your end step, discard your hand, then draw X cards where X is the number of planeswalkers you control.
Oh,
so don't do it on turn 1 unless you're going for like Ultra Dredge.
Yeah, that might actually be way too good for Dredge.
Wow.
Well, I don't know. Dredge can do Breakthrough instead, so. But it's high risk, relatively high reward, because you can potentially be restocking your hand, but you've got to get out 2 to 3 planeswalkers to this be worth it. So it may look like it costs one, but this is what I like about it is because much like him, it looks like trash. But if you go through some hoops, it might be okay. So much like Tybalt.
I was gonna say, so you managed to make an Oath of Tybalt that is just as bad, if not worse, than Tybalt himself.
And that's there you go. And I wanted to capture the feel of, you know, doing what he does. And he's all about pain. I read his bio. I don't know that I realized this at first. He actually used to be a man. And then he made a pact with some devils and used some of their magic and turned into half devil. Well, so
sort of.
It's not like a Liliana like packed with demons. It's more that, you know, he delved into some magic he shouldn't really get into.
Yeah, he was all about experimenting with pain and torturing people and whatnot, so much so that the devils of Innistrad would come hang out and watch.
Yeah. Like, which is messed up.
Like, they're like, this guy gets it. And so. He got more and more into it and more careless. And the townsfolk of Innistrad, like they do, got their torches and pitchforks and went after him. And
like they do.
And instead of, you know, getting killed or jailed or something like that, he cast a spell both from the things he had learned about pain and torture and the things the devils had been whispering to him while he was working, and ended up fusing the essence of the devils that were there with his own.
Yeah.
But it says, the spell fused his own essence with theirs at the cost of experiencing all the pain he had inflicted on others. So, and that ignited his spark, and I'm sure that and being a half-devil sort of drove him a little... So...
It's like Hellboy meets the Fly.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Anybody have any ideas other than what I just said about Oath of Tybalt?
Yeah, Mike, what'd you come up with?
Tybalt was hard because you know, Chewie just read the story, but and we know some stuff about him, but the only card they ever made doesn't actually have a whole lot to do with that. Like the Tybalt card was R&D saying, hey, can we make a 2-mana planeswalker? And the result is, well, that just happened, you know.
Can we? Yes. Should we?
And the notes I have, you know, for each of the planeswalkers, I wrote down some important notes on things and concepts and mechanics that were important to them. For Tybalt, I had pain, violence, sucks. And then for my notes on possible abilities, I had damage for the enters the battlefield, like Brian said. And then my other note for the other ability, I didn't take it very seriously. I wrote down the words pointless garbage. So,
oh my god! So you predicted Brian's card.
There you go.
And it was probably going to end up being some kind of drawing and discarding thing, because that's the only thing I have to go by from his card, even though that doesn't have a lot to do with his character and the story that's been built up for him. So I don't know what's going on with Tybalt. I don't know what to do with him.
Yeah, and it's a good thing they have a story about him, because on the related cards section of the Planeswalker story here, it's got the new browbeat from the dual decks that says, pained defiance or shameful surrender. Every reaction is a pleasant surprise. Tybalt. And then the only other related card is Explosive Impact that just has Tybalt in the art. And I don't even know if it has Tybalt in the art.
Was it maybe from Sorin versus Tybalt?
No, it's in Return. It's from Return to Ravnica. It's the only printing.
Okay.
So I honestly don't know why this is here.
What does Explosive Impact do?
5 damage to target creature or player for 6 mana.
Hmm.
But it's from Return to Ravnica, so I don't think it's got Tybalt in the art. Although the art is kind of small.
Tybalt would fit right in at Rakdos.
Oh, straight up.
And he Although he probably... he really, although even the Rakdos sometimes have safe words, he doesn't really have a safe word. But
need or want a safe word.
Yeah. What's your flavor text for Tybalt?
Well, again, we don't know much about Tybalt, so he's a one note pony, but he's like, for all the delicious pain I can inflict, I will keep watch.
Yep.
And then that would, of course, be followed by, but it's hard to put that on a card.
Yeah. Everybody else on the team is looking at him like, how did this guy get here?
It's like when the bad guys from Justice League, like the Injustice Society or whatever, whenever the Joker shows up, they all start like edging away from him just slightly. Like, these are the biggest and baddest ass villains ever. And they're like, that guy creeps me out. And the Joker's like, and they're like, I'm going to stand behind the Ultra Humanoid, and the Ultra Humanoids don't stand behind me. That's just how I pictured that.
Nice. Well, I think that's probably a good way to leave things for now.
Yeah. So, listeners, if you have any ideas about any of these, by all means, let us know somehow. Email, comment, Twitter, Facebook. We got all those things. And if we didn't hit one that you really like, feel free to complain, but we will do this again sometime in the hopefully near future.
Yeah, I think we should.
Before Neverending Preview Season kicks back up again.
Ugh.
I did get a tweet or a message. I can't remember where I saw it, but someone sent a message and said, you know, you're going to be judged on at least one of your oaths in like 3 months. And I was like, 3 months, nothing. With the way Neverending Preview Season works, it'll probably be like 2 weeks. Because they're going to possibly have a new one, you know.
I think the only possible. What do we do? So we touched on Liliana. We didn't get to.
We didn't do Sorin or Temio.
No, we didn't do Sorin or Temio.
Or Nahiri.
Well, I don't know how much of a team player Nahiri is right now.
I don't know, but you know, you never know. We don't know where they're going with the story. Maybe she's redeemable.
I do want to say I love the smirk on her face on her original Planeswalker art because it's on a card. I've never really seen it before, but on this Planeswalker page, it's a close up of her face, and she's got it's a smirk that says, "Okay, wait, let me see. What is this? This is a smirk of." Is that all? Or like, I could do better. You know, she's got the sword, you know, on her shoulder and she's like, psh. And it's just, it's this really creepy. We should have known she was going to go bad just from that art. Look at that.
I mean, Nahiri is a very powerful planeswalker. I mean, Sorin and Ugin, ancient, mega powerful beings in their own right, had to enlist her help to make this plan work.
The magic storyline from this Wednesday actually showed an exchange between Sorin and Nahiri when she came to see him after she had woken up and had to deal with some Eldrazi breaking out prematurely. And this was many, 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 many years before the current storyline. She came to Innistrad and he had literally just finished putting Avacyn together. And if it wasn't for Avacyn in this exchange...
Sorry, I just had a picture of him, like, screwing in her leg. They're like, right, I'm done.
Well, pretty much. I mean, I don't want to spoil the story because it literally just came out. But when she gets there, he is meditating because he is taking so much out of him to make her. And again, this was pre-mending Sorin, so it took a lot out of him. And even he remarks in the story about how the air around her has changed and she has gained much more confidence and much more power than the last time he saw her. So she is not afraid of him, which is a difference between her and most other planeswalkers that have actually heard of him. So, But we don't know. We're not sure how this story is exactly going to end. Because I don't know that Sorin is necessarily 100% a good guy, so you can't necessarily say that she's 100% a bad guy.
I think we can confidently say Sorin is not 100% a good guy.
Well, there you go. But both of them are obviously willing to take innocent lives because they feel like they're better than them. So Yeah. But so you're wondering about who the next Oath could be? Like in the actual storyline? Is that where you're going with that?
I'm thinking
Tamiyo, probably.
In my mind, Tamiyo has the best chance. And then after that, I think Liliana's in second place.
I'd say that's a pretty distant second.
Yeah.
The way that she's been interacting with Jace lately is like, I really don't need you. And you don't – she's fed up. She's like, you don't listen to me anyway. He's like, I'm going to go see Soren. She's like, that's a bad idea. He's like, okay, I'll go see him in the morning. She's like
– You dumb, son.
Yeah.
Jace is like, what?
Yeah. My guess is if he recruits anybody, it's Tamiyo. But we don't – not knowing what's going to happen in the story, he may just be happy to get away from Innistrad with his life and his sanity intact. So
resurrected Xenagos out of nowhere.
I've got an Oath of Xenagos, but we'll get to that next time.
Oh, calling it the mysterious thing underwater that the cultists are worshipping, Xenagos.
Xenagos.
Totally. Called it.
I mean, it's not Captain America, so it's got to be Xenagos.
Is it Aang, the thing in the ice?
Oh, it could be Aang, yeah. It was Aang in Avatar form, so that's why he's a horror. Yep.
He fused with Captain America. They did the fusion dance.
While frozen. And Xenagos was playing the music, because he's a party animal. Anyway, so, final thoughts, Dorks. Who's up?
Yes, I'll go first.
All right.
Okay.
So news in terms of the home front and everything, Leighton had the flu earlier this week, and so that was fun. He's staying with the grandparents right now, and he's actually starting to get homesick, which is actually kind of nice, because it's nice to know that my child is, like, wants to come back home.
I know what he's talking about. That is a nice, you don't want them to feel bad, but you want to feel like, oh, they do want to spend time.
It's like, yeah, staying over the grandparents is fun and games until you're ready to come back home.
Mm-hmm.
And the kids are like, I'm ready to come back home. But I thought I would sort of end. So I was busy on Facebook, and one of my friends had I have a lot of science friends, and so one of them was a bunch of science jokes, and so I thought I'd read three of them and call it a night. And okay. One of them is, the Higgs boson walks into a church. The priest says he doesn't allow Higgs bosons in here. The Higgs boson says, but without me, how can you have mass?
I feel like I'm not smart enough for this joke, but don't bother explaining it. Just keep going.
There's a picture of Darwin, and it says, I talked about survival of the fittest before the Hunger Games.
Okay.
Hipster.
And the last one is, two men walk into a bar. The first one orders H2O. The second one says, sounds good, I'll have H2O too. The second man died.
Isn't that something terribly, awfully, you know, not good to eat?
It's hydrogen peroxide.
Hydrogen peroxide, yeah. H2O2, ah, ha, ha, ha.
Yeah.
Yep, those are all pretty good.
But how can you have mass?
I got the second
one. That one I laughed very much. I had a mute at one point. I was laughing at that one. The Higgs boson's the particle that's thought to give mass to matter, and which is why it's funny.
Catholic mass.
Okay. I figured that was probably something close to that. I just had not heard of that. So, okay.
Mm-hmm. All right. So with that, that's what I'm leaving on tonight. So.
All right, then. Night, Dirk, and enjoy your chickens.
I had to go put them away, so they're back in their cage until tomorrow. Man, they're, like, eating all around the tree we put them around. Like, they've started eating everything. So we're hoping that they'll start eating the fire ants before long. Stupid fire ants.
Is that a thing that chickens eat?
I hope so. They'll eat everything else. I hope they'll eat fire ants.
Send us an email if chickens eat fire ants. Send us an email if
that is or is not the case.
Okay, so Tibble likes to experiment on things and put them through painful processes. And at least, he started out at least having some bent towards science. Dirk raises living animals and forces them to try and ingest stinging, biting insects.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a top hat?
Are you trying to say I should be Tibbled? Because if so, you might be,
no one should be Tibbled.
No. Just say no to Tibble, kids.
If someone says you want to try to be Tibbled, the answer is no. The answer is always no.
By the way, I typed in, do chickens eat F? And it finished fire ants for me. So This is apparently like an actual question that gets asked relatively frequently.
And what's the answer?
I'm finding yes and no, so I don't think anyone knows.
Well, Dirk,
science experiment. Go! Like I said, we will find out. Stay tuned for a future episode. In which case, either Dirk is a happy person, is like, yay, there's no fire ants, but there's a lot of chicken poo. Or Dirk will be going, darn, they don't eat to the fire ants, and there's still a lot of chicken poo.
When was the fire ants don't eat the chickens?
The fire ants don't eat the chickens? Well, we might turn some of them into chicken, like chicken nuggets. I don't know. Stay tuned. Same bat time, same bat place.
It's all right.
And with that, I'm out. Have a good night, everybody.
Night, sir.
All right. You too.
Good night.
Okay, there we go. So, Brian, how about you? Since Dirk left and the recording software decided it was done. But now we're up again, so what you got, B?
All right, so for my final thought, it's been kind of a crazy week. Finished taxes, which was a little late for us, but we got a lot of stuff around the house right now. I had a big year last year. Everybody's happy and healthy at this point. No communicable diseases or anything like that. I'm just tired. I think I had something to say earlier. I've been waiting for duels to update because they have been saying for a while now, okay, Oath of the Gatewatch and Shadows Over Innistrad are coming to duels. And every time I try and log on to duels, it tells me that the servers are down. So it
updated like last Wednesday or Thursday.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Maybe I should try and do it again a little later.
I have a video that I've recorded for the second Battle for Zendikar. It's not up yet, but I've recorded it for the second Battle for Zendikar video, and the new update was live. So I'm not sure what your problem is. Where are you playing it? On the iPad?
Sorry about that. You blinked out for a minute on my end. On my iPhone.
Okay, maybe you should try manually updating it, maybe?
That might be it, because usually it updates automatically, but I'm wondering if I need to go into the App Store and just make sure that I have the most recent version. I had that thought earlier, and I've just been too busy to follow up on it. So
yeah, because it's there. Mike already played through at least some of the Oath story, right?
I played the Oath story and the Shadows Over Innistrad story.
Oh, you did it all. Well, screw you.
Are they long stories or short stories this time?
They're like at least 5 or 6 missions each.
Okay, but they're not like the origin stories where it's like 5 collections of chapters.
No, they're like the Battle for Zendikar, where it's just one.
Okay.
One campaign.
Okay. But I am looking forward to, I should be going to F&M tomorrow. I've got a deck I'm working on. I'm going to try and go to the SCG Regionals tournament on the 23rd. The 23rd is standard, the 24th is modern. Not only do I not really have a modern deck set up right now, but that's a Sunday, and I've got other commitments that day. But if anybody wants to come with me, like, you know, Dirk, who probably doesn't have a standard deck right now, or Mike or anybody, welcome to come. Carrie is looking at coming along and maybe dropping me off and doing some things with Sam. while she's in Durham, and I've got a deck I'm working on, and I'm going to try and take it to F&M tomorrow. Mike helped me out by getting some of the stuff I need, and hopefully it won't suck. So I will report back later on my potential suckage or lack thereof.
Cool.
Yay. It's a white-black Eldrazi deck, and it was somewhat comforting watching the coverage from last weekend to see a white-black Eldrazi deck make top eight, although it's interesting that that version, which was run by a lot of the guys from SCG, and there was a deck tech on it by Brad Nelson, not the love child of Brad Nelson and Jerry Thompson. I'm tired. But that version is a little heavier on the blink Eldrazi, and mine was more put together when I saw the interaction or the potential interaction between Declaration of Stone and other exile effects, which are rather plentiful these days, and the processors, like the Wasteland Strangler. So turn two, Declaration of Stone, turn three, Wasteland Strangler is just crazy. So, and then I've got more top end stuff. Like that deck was not running any Reality Smashers, and I've got a set of those. So we'll see how it goes, and I'll report back. And with that, I also shall bid. Well, is it going to screw up the recording if I leave?
I have no idea. So give it a shot. It'll be a learning experience.
I'll give it a shot because I also need to change up some laundry and then sleep, and I'm barely seeing in front of myself. Wow. Hope to see you tomorrow. Mike, are you planning to be at Lucky's tomorrow?
Yes, I will. I'll be playing
F&M. Right. Then I will do my best to be there. Have a good night, everybody, and good night, Seattle. We love you.
Well, that answered my question. I was going to say, is he gone? But okay, now is he gone?
Maybe. Did the recording break itself?
Nope, still says recording a call. Dirk was apparently the linchpin of this whole situation.
Yeah. In other weirdness, the backup recording I usually make with Pamela never started, which is weird because I know I clicked the button. There's just nothing here, and it's not recording, and it wasn't recording earlier.
I blame the Eldrazi.
Yeah.
They got crapped out of Modern, so now they're taking it out on our recording software. Get your tentacles out of my MP3s, you bastards. Well, then how about you, Mike?
I am considering Brian's invitation to go to the SCG thing. The problem is that I only sort of have an idea for a standard deck right now, and I don't know if it'll actually be any good in the face of the new popular decks that people are starting to build, and I just don't know whether I'll build it. When I go to F&M tomorrow, I'll be playing Modern again, but I decided to switch it up a little bit, and I'm back on the comedy option for a deck. I decided to put together Goblin Charbelcher again and see if it'll work. Because by the numbers, it should work much more often than it did for me the one time I tried it. Because all that night, there was only one game where a Goblin Charbelcher was able to make it into my hand.
When that is a good point. There are,
in a situation where I don't have all of the lands on the battlefield already, then there should be six opportunities to draw it, either the four Belchers or the two Fabricates. In a situation where I have gotten all the land onto the battlefield, then there's four more opportunities because I can use Recross the Paths to stack my deck and put a Charbelcher on top and draw it. So I ran into some rough luck. But I'm playing a Goblin Charbelcher deck that only has seven lands in it. And seven is also the magic number that you need to cast and activate Goblin Charbelcher. It's possible to get seven mana available by turn three if certain things happen. It's possible to get all seven lands onto the battlefield by turn four. But it's not, it's definitely not the most consistent thing in the world. It is very luck based, but when it works, you win. So. And it's also very silly, and it's very amusing. So,
All right.
Hopefully that won't be a complete and total failure tomorrow.
Hmm. Well, good luck and stuff. Whereas last time I went to watch for comedy, I don't know if I could bear watching all that not comedy again. That, and I haven't actually had a chance to do any work all week because I've been driving all week, and yeah.
You have better stuff to do than watch me play an idiot deck.
I don't know about better, but...
More productive.
Yeah, okay, we'll go with that, yeah. So, I guess that leaves me. Speaking of more productive, I've got another VVVVVV video. The last one, if you guys saw it, it just sort of ends. That's because I played for a very long time and didn't realize it. Because I really need like a timer or something set up that I can see. That I can just reach over and hit go, and then play for a while, and then look over to see if I've been going for 45 freaking minutes. And so I had to cut it into two just because VVVVVV is, it's fun to watch, but not for that long. So, I've got the second part of that. I've got the next Battle for Zendikar Duels story video recorded. I did manage to get... I started Heroic Blackrock Mountain on Hearthstone finally, and I did manage to get that one posted before I started working full-time. Seriously, dude, yesterday I filled out timesheets for 13 hours. Like, damn. Granted, I only actually worked 11 of them, and they owed me the 2 hours for other things. But still, I worked 11 hours yesterday. Anyway, I'm better. So yeah, that's all stuff that I have right now that's ready to be edited that I will start on, I guess, when I get back from freaking Raleigh tomorrow. Anyway, because I was going to take tomorrow off, dear listeners, so that I could get more content out to you. But no, I can't. Because there's more work to be done. I tried to pass it off to the old man, and the old man was like, no, you make the money. Thanks, old man. If the making money was the priority, I'd have a real job. But whatever. I'm also still addicted to Rocket League. Does anyone play Rocket League? You should play Rocket League. Oh my god. So what else? Is that all? I guess that's it for me, because I'm tired, and I'd really like to get this posted tonight, if at all possible. So, yeah, I guess I'll be done. So, if you would like to contact us in any way, there are lots of ways. You can do it on Twitter, at the Manipool. You can send us an email to dorks@themanipool.com. Be warned, if you go through the email contact form on the website, for some reason, that still goes to spam.
And yeah, Gmail loves to send that to spam.
Yeah, and... thus far, we think we've rescued them all from spam, but we can't be sure. So it's probably better to just email us directly from your email, dorks@themanipool.com, rather than using the contact field, just to be safe. What else is there? There's the Facebook page, which is facebook.com/themanipool. There's leaving comments on the episode on themanipool.com. I would say you could leave comments on mtgcast.com, and you can, but nobody's going to see it, so I would recommend not doing that. There's no sort of notification system for comments on mtgcast, and it's not even easy to see them if you just go look. You know, just, hey, I wonder if there are any comments. You have to, like, click on each individual post, I believe.
Yeah. It used to have a thing. It used to have more visibility, but something changed, and...
That was before the redesign, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Because the redesign is now sort of, it's not bad, but it's not as functional in some ways. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll go with that. I can't even find... Oh, here we go. Yeah, you can't actually see whether or not there are comments on a post until you click on it. And then you have to scroll all the way down to the bottom. So yeah, please don't comment on our MTGcast post, cause that's not something we'll ever see ever. But is that it? That's probably enough. And of course, there is the YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/c/themanipool, or its username, themanipooltube. Either one of those, or just search for the Manipool, and it's the one with our logo. So that was easy. And the thumbnails with my face on them. Yeah. Dude, Mike, we need to play more games at some point. Yeah, hell yeah.
Yes, we do.
Because the Nidhogg video got a lot of positive response, and it also was pretty cool. It was on sale the week that it went up. So some of our listeners were like, that looked like so much fun, I'm going to buy it, because it was like a buck and change or $2 or three, I don't remember now.
Mm-hmm.
But it was cheap as balls.
Oh, cool.
So that was cool.
Yeah, when I signed on to Skype, there was a message waiting for me. One of our listeners, Andrew, told me that, let's see, I think it's still here what he say. He said, that Nidhogg video was about the funniest thing I've seen in a long time. And I told him, thanks, we had a lot of fun playing it. That was very fun.
Yeah, if we ever do that again, I think you're going to need to practice first, because I don't know what happened, but you were awful. And you weren't awful.
Yeah, it was pretty rough.
You weren't awful the other time we played, and that bothers me.
I think I was just trying to do things that the timing of the game just wasn't going to allow to work. I just wasn't playing right.
That makes sense. You know, since you're not right. Oh, okay. Anyway. But anyway, that's all that stuff. I'm trying to figure out what game series to start next for the YouTube channel. I have lots of options, and I don't know. But I have too many options to bother rattling them off, because the Beast can now play all of the things. And so now I have decision paralysis, rather than, damn it, I can't play the games I want to play, it's, I can record everything. And it's a problem. Like, I'm mad with power. So, Aaron, buddy, I love you. And you know why. So, I think I'll shut up now for real. So, I was about to say, like this video if you enjoyed it. Oh, my God. So, this has been episode 415 of The Manipool, brought to you, as always, by CardShark.com. Thank you all so very much. I forgot to mention the Patreon. There, I mentioned the Patreon. Every little bit helps. Behind the scenes stuff. Early shows and videos. I'm tired too. So, thank you all so very much for listening, and go play some Magic. With Planeswalkers. And their oaths. But not Tybalt.